What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This week, we're going to be doing a little continuation from last week, talking about how over the last, you know, few thousand years, humans' jaws and faces have changed. And we're going to go through like kind of the reasons behind that, like, you know, why are human jaws so small? Like, why do so many people have to get their wisdom teeth removed? If you think about it, it doesn't make any sort of sense. So we're going to kind of dive into that a little bit. But first, there's a little beef going on in our community. So me and Tom are, we're not really 100% any community, like 100% carnivore, 100% keto. We're kind of our own little space. But two big players in our world right now, Sean Baker and Paul Saladino, are kind of beefing a little bit. And so me and Tom wanted to talk about that just a little bit because I think we have an opinion on it, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So Saladino's point is that chicken and pork are heavily favored in like polyunsaturated fats, like the omega-6s. They have a lot more of that than omega-3s. And everybody knows that omega-6s from vegetable oils are really bad. So he's trying to make the same point that the omega-6s in chicken and pork are also really bad and are going to cause you health issues. That's his point. You want to give Baker's rebuttal to that?
Yeah, so Baker's rebuttal, and I'm 100% on Baker's side, is that the amount, it's true that the ratio in chicken and pork is skewed, even in eggs, is very skewed heavily towards omega-6 to omega-3. So you're going to find a ratio that isn't favorable, maybe say 10 to 1, let's say. But the amount, the total of these polyunsaturated fats, the omega-3s and the omega-6 in these cuts of meat is so minuscule that it really doesn't matter because you're not getting a lot. And kind of the, what is it, the poison's in the dose? Is that saying?
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, a little bit of the stuff's fine. But when you get these big, heavy doses, that's when kind of metabolic dysfunction kicks in. And you get those real heavy, heavy doses of omega-6s from vegetable oils. Things like canola oil, soy oil, corn oil. Those are like kind of the big three. So all these studies that kind of tie omega-6s and inflammation to these vegetable oils and how bad they are for you, that's all true. But to say, to take that information and plug it into chicken and pork, I don't think you can do that. So I don't agree with Saladino at all. And I've looked at the data personally, and I know that the amount of omega-3s and omega-6s in pork and chicken is just not a lot. And if you want more info, we have a whole podcast on vegetable oils and why they're so bad. So why canola oil is so bad, why soy oil is so bad. It's a while ago now. I think it's in the 40s or 50s. So just look up, I think it's titled industrial seed oil, so you can go back and listen to all that. But I'm on Sean Baker's side at all, that we can't kind of make that conclusion.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you. I mean, unless your diet is only consisting of like chicken and pork, and like maybe that difference can make build up over, you know, years and years and years. Mm-hmm. But I mean, still, even then, I still think you're going to be far healthier than most other people if you're living off of that. And so I actually just posted a chart on our Facebook yesterday that has a list of like canola oil, olive oil, chicken, pork, and like all these other foods, just listing the amount of omega-6s in there. So just in comparison, for a 100-gram serving, there's 23,000 milligrams of omega-6s in canola oil. There's about 1,000 in pork and 600 to like 700 in chicken. So 23,000 to about 1,000, not even a close comparison.
Yeah, not even, like, yeah, exactly. It's not even close. And you don't forget everything else you get from the chicken and pork. Like, just to blame chicken and pork because they don't have the best omega-3 to omega-6 ratio kind of negates or forgets all the vitamins and minerals and quality protein that you get from those sources. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not the biggest chicken and pork guy. Like, I eat pork and I eat chicken, sure, but I do rely mostly on beef because it's just a super, super quality source of food, in my opinion, or probably the best source of food, in my opinion. But still, I would never come out and say, if you like pork, don't eat pork. I would never say that.
Yeah, I like bacon way too much to be giving up pork.
Yeah.
And, like, my go-to meal if I'm going to go eat out is usually, like, some chicken wings. Like, I'm not about to give those up.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't. Yeah. So, I think, I don't know, Saladino is getting a little too extreme, even for a guy like me who's pretty extreme, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's discouraging, I think, because not everybody lives on a doctor's salary. Sometimes, like, you have to buy chicken. Chicken's dirt cheap. Like, sometimes in the store, it's, like, 99 cents a pound.
Yep.
And you compare that to beef, which is, like, you know, like, $5 to $10 a pound. Sometimes, hey, like, you're on a budget. You just got to deal with chicken for a couple weeks. Like, the message that he's sending out there is, like, discouraging you from, say, like, eating that chicken, comparing it to something like canola oil, which those are not even close to being the same thing. Like, one is far worse for you. I wouldn't even know if I'd even consider chicken bad for you. I mean, I'd still say it's probably better for you than worse. You know, it's, like, so pretty good.
Yeah, I wouldn't say chicken's bad for you at all. And I think, like, getting a rotisserie chicken, say, from, like, Costco for, like, $10 is, like, a great value. You're getting probably, I don't know, a pound and a half of quality muscle meat. And you're also getting a ton of skin, which is going to have all that collagen protein that we need. And all those amino acids that are kind of lacking from our most people's diet. And, yeah, I would never say people don't eat that. Now, I don't think people should eat that 24/7, 365, like you said. I think you should have a steak, you know, once or twice a week at least. But if you can't afford it, then don't eat it.
I think that pretty much summarizes, like, our point on this.
Yeah.
I've been hearing rumors that they're going to have a debate. I just don't know when and where that's going to take place. If they do, I'm sure we'll talk about it a lot more.
Didn't this stem from a honey fight, though? Didn't it start with honey, or did it start with the seed oils or the omega-6s? What did it start with?
I'm not sure who started it, but that's what they've been kind of going back and forth with.
Okay.
Like, because Saladino is also saying that, like, honey's fine. And I don't know if Baker fired back at him or not, but, like, I know other people labs, like, there's so much fructose in it. How are you going to say fructose is good for you, but say that chicken's bad? Like, what are you talking about?
Yep. Yeah, man. So, Saladino's digging himself a hole. Like, I don't know. It's weird. And did you know Saladino's on, like, a board of some sort of, like, honey organization? Did you know that?
I did not, but...
Yeah, so he, like... It makes sense, right? So Baker actually posted something on Twitter, or it might have been Instagram, kind of saying, like, yeah, of course Saladino is pushing honey because the more honey sold, the better he looks. So he's on a board of this group that, like, tries to promote honey as a health food.
Well,
that's a conflict of interest, you know? Yeah, it's a conflict of interest. Yeah, I'm not, like, inherently against honey. Like, honestly, I could really give a shit. I talked about it in our, I think, like, muscle building supplement podcast, how using carbohydrates for insulin, like, response to build muscle is something you should do. I think, you know, if you're really trying to put on a bunch of muscle. But, and if you want to do, like, a spoonful of honey for that, go ahead. You know, I don't care. But to say that honey is, like, super special and that honey doesn't have the same effects as, like, a Coke or, I don't know, fruit juice, I know that's not true.
All right, so should we go on to the article of the week?
Yeah, so the article of the week this week is from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. I'll just read the whole title, and the whole title will give away the whole study. But it's titled, Whey Protein But Not Collagen Peptides Stimulate Acute and Longer-Term Muscle Protein Synthesis With and Without Resistance Exercise in Healthy Older Women, a Randomized Controlled Trial. And I pulled this article just because collagen protein is super in right now. Everyone loves collagen protein, especially in the keto world. You see a bunch of keto mixes that add collagen protein like it's something special. And I'm not inherently against collagen protein. I'm really not. But collagen protein cannot be the basis or the backbone of your diet. And it's damn near specifically for this reason. It's lacking in certain amino acids that prevent it from stimulating muscle protein synthesis adequately. So that's what this whole study said.
Yeah, don't let the intimidating title, like, get you confused. The article is, like, pretty much just that sentence and then, like, a little bit more. That's basically the entire article. So it is worth a read. One thing I am curious, though, is that they only looked at muscle protein synthesis. I'm wondering if they looked at things like bone density, if that would have been any different with a collagen supplement.
Yeah, no clue. I know they didn't look at it, and that's, I think it's hard. That's way harder to look at, you know, and way harder to measure, especially in a short time frame. But
well, I think you can with a DEXA scan. I think it measures bone density.
You think it measured like accurately enough that after like a 2 week supplement you'd see a change?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because you would need like a decimal point, like six decimals deep. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you'd have to go. You'd have to probably do this for like a 6 month time period.
Yeah,
something like that.
Notice it. Yeah, exactly. So, but they could do it. Yeah, you're right. They probably could do that study, but this study wasn't that deep at all. It just, I don't know. We did a podcast on whey protein powder and just protein powders in general, so you can go back and listen to that if you want. And this is just on backs up one of the points I made, that a quality whey protein or egg protein, beef protein, any protein that has a complete amino acid profile should be the backbone of your diet. And of course you should get that from your meals, but that's why collagen protein cannot be the backbone of a diet, in my opinion. That's because it is lacking in certain amino acids, and it's very low in leucine, and leucine is the amino acid that triggers muscle protein synthesis. So that's why, you know, this study showed what it showed. You know, these women drank whey, and they had an enhanced muscle protein synthesis response, meaning their body promoted building muscle. And then these women drank a collagen peptide drink, and they didn't have the same response. So they did not build the same amount of muscle. And actually, they didn't really promote it at all in the women that did not train. So the women that didn't train and had the collagen protein peptide by powder barely stimulated muscle protein synthesis, like not enough to build any muscle, period. So I don't know. The article is on the website, so TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. You can find it out. Just read it. Like Tom said, it's pretty short, and it's just kind of more evidence that us promoting a whey protein or just whole foods protein is a way to go.
I completely agree with that. I mean, it's not that collagen protein doesn't have its place. It's just that it shouldn't be used to build muscle.
Yeah.
Like, it's there for other things. It's great for stuff like gut health, skin health, hair health. Honestly, most people don't get a lot of collagen in their diet, and it's high in glycine. So that could be a great way to get glycine, because glycine, it's in muscle meat, but not as high. So, yeah, balancing out, like, if you just do muscle meat, you don't do things like bone broth, you're not doing chicken skins or, like, pork rinds, anything like that, a collagen supplement can be its place, but don't think you're going to get big like Arnold like that.
Yeah, you have a good point. So let's just get to the podcast this week, and this goes kind of inspired by you, because you had you kind of just had a question that I guess that was bothering you for a while.
Yeah, I've had this question for a long time, and then going through the Breathe book, it like just kind of brought that back to the surface. And that question is, it's pretty simple. Why do humans have wisdom teeth when almost everybody gets them removed? I got all mine removed. Did you get all yours taken out too?
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, I mean, like, honestly, you ask around, most people have had theirs removed. So it's like, why would we even get these teeth if we're just going to get them removed? Because 300-400 years ago, our ancestors wouldn't have been able to get them removed. Like, dentistry was a bitch. Like, it still is a bitch. Like,
yeah.
When I had to get knocked out, like, half my day I was, like, asleep from the drugs and stuff. Like, that was pretty difficult with today's technology. It had been damn near impossible to do a few hundred years ago, more or less a few thousand years ago. So,
yeah.
Like, why would we even have them?
You know, I never thought of it like that, to be honest. Like, this is a question that never crossed my mind. But you think it would just come, like, because a lot of my arguments are from an evolutionary perspective. And from an evolution perspective, we would not keep these expensive-ass, big-ass teeth if we couldn't use them. Like, we would have dropped them out millions of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the point. But I guess just not a lot of people are curious about this. They just, oh, hey, my dentist told me to get surgery. I'm going to go get surgery.
Yeah.
Like, that's as far as they think about it. According to this study by the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, human jaws are getting smaller. And this phenomenon is observed across the world and pretty much all different types of populations. Once hunter-gatherers switched to an agricultural diet, whenever in the human timeline that is, their jaws got smaller. Populations that have kept their ancestral diet have wide jaws, straight teeth, and pretty much no cavities or gum disease. So this is called de-evolution. Like, evolution is supposed to be like you're evolving to get better. De-evolution is when you're evolving to get worse. Since humans don't really have to deal with survival of the fittest that much anymore, because we just have technology and that has taken over the world, like, we're starting to de-evolve. So there's two popular hypotheses. Is that right? Hypotheses? I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, either or.
So there's two popular ideas about this. So one, our jaws are smaller due to a lack of chewing, resulting in less musculature. The other theory is that our jaws are smaller due to malnutrition. And I think both of these are great ideas, and it's really hard to tell, like, which one to put sock in, like, more sock in, but let's kind of break them both down. So the subject of last week's podcast, Breathe by James Nestor, he has, I think the longest chapter of his book is on this topic, and he says that jaws are smaller due to a lack of chewing. So humans that eat an agricultural diet depend on many soft foods, such as, like, flour, rice, you know, wheat. Just think of, like, bread and rice. Like, that's the basic, like, cereal, oatmeal, all these foods, very, very soft. And you really don't even need teeth to chew them. You could pretty much just swallow them whole. So the introduction of all these soft foods resulted in a significant decrease in the size and strength of our chewing muscles. Small muscles means strong, small bones. Like, this is how it happens, like, when you start working out. Once you get big muscles, your bone density increases too to deal with those loads. Well, the opposite is also true. If your muscles get smaller, your bones get smaller because they don't need to support all these heavy loads that you're putting on that. That's true if it's your legs, your arms, or in this case, your jaw.
Yeah, I mean, this is, like, if you think about it just from a super top-level perspective, we know if you don't use a muscle, you lose it. You don't use it, you lose it. If you, like, in the Breathe book, you talk about breathing through your nose. For the people who didn't breathe through their nose for multiple years, they lost all musculature in their nose. So it makes perfect sense that if you don't use your jaw is going to get smaller, your bones are going to get smaller and weaker.
I just love how you call that top level.
You don't think it's top level?
If you don't use it, you lose it. Yeah, that's about as top level as it is.
I think so.
So this study from the NIH was done on rats and demonstrates that soft foods resulted in smaller jaws. And switching the rats back to a harder food diet, it resulted in increased bone density and larger jaws. So what they did for this study, they gave them soft pellets, and then they noticed that there was, like, a smaller, weaker jaws. And then they switched them back to a harder pellet, and that resulted in bigger jaws, stronger jaws, and straighter as well. Usually larger goes with straighter. So that just goes on to what I said. Muscles and bones are directly related to each other. As one grows bigger and stronger, the other one grows bigger and stronger. The opposite is also true. When they get smaller and weaker, the other one gets smaller and weaker. So hunter-gatherers, or people still living on an ancestral diet, they eat a lot of, like, meat, fruit, nuts, seeds, these type of foods. All these foods are hard and require a lot of chewing. So that means your jaw muscles are going to be working all the time to break down all these foods. Your jaw muscles work, they get bigger and stronger. Your muscles get bigger and stronger, that means your jaw bones have to get bigger and stronger too to support that muscle. And also those muscles pulling on your jaws are going to kind of pull your bones to make them wider. So it makes them healthier. So I think we talked about this last week in the Breathe podcast, that mouth breathers, they get narrower faces and longer faces. But if you're a nasal breather, your face starts to get wider. And that has to do with, like, your jaw shape.
You know, I'm thinking about right now, just think about how tough it is. Not that I've ever done it, but, you know, you've seen a dog do it, and you can imagine it. If you try to chew, like, a raw steak, like a raw ribeye.
I've never tried doing that, but I mean, like, there's...
You can imagine how hard it is, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And we've done a podcast actually on how cooking affects food and what's, like, the earliest signs of us cooking food. And the earliest sign, which is kind of weak, is about 700,000 years ago. So, honestly, for the majority of our evolution, we were chewing meat raw. And so that's a lot of work. So that obviously would develop our jaw muscles tremendously.
I mean, even comparing the chewing that you do with, like, some ground beef that's already basically chewed up for you. Like, if you eat a hamburger, you're still chewing a lot more than you would be if you're eating something like oatmeal.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, are you even chewing one bite? Like, I mean, you pretty much just swallow that thing whole.
Yeah, like soup. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so that's one hypothesis. Let's look at the other one. This one is that malnutrition leads to smaller jaws. And this idea was made popular by Weston A. Price. He's a Cleveland dentist that studied indigenous populations, trying to find out more about dental health. Basically, why do people following the Western diet have all these gum issues, but people that follow like ancestral diets, why are they so much healthier when it comes to gum disease?
And Weston A. Price is not some scrub. This guy, he's honestly like written the book. He has a whole book, a whole series on ancestral eating and why today's nutrition is fucked and how like back in the day they got so many more nutrients. So Weston A. Price is like the OG guy in this field. He knows what he's talking. He's dead now, but he knew what he was talking about, you know?
Yeah, so pretty much like before the whole primal diet, paleo diet, keto diet, like how all these are popular now, pretty much all of those people pulled his data.
Yes.
Like, he was the like original collector of all this stuff that made people switch back to this like ancestral way of eating.
Yeah.
So he found that indigenous populations not only had larger jaws and straighter teeth, but they did not suffer from any of the chronic diseases that plagued Western civilizations. So, I mean, that's crazy. So, better teeth, better jaws, like, more beautiful smiles, and they don't have things like diabetes, obesity, heart disease, cancer, all this other stuff.
Yep.
So, I don't know if everybody watched the Michael Jordan documentary. I know I did. I feel like everybody that I've talked to watched that. And this is just kind of a sign of what happens when you go from malnourished to properly nourished. So, Scottie Pippen was 6'1 when he graduated high school. Dennis Rodman was only 5'9 when he graduated high school, and both of them were pretty scrawny. Fast forward like 5 years later, both of them are 6'8 and are just like beasts. They're both just so muscular, some of the most athletic people that the NBA has ever seen. I mean, that's better than like that Captain America serum that he had.
Yeah.
I mean, these fools just grew like crazy. I mean, Dennis Rodman growing almost a foot. Like, that's insane in only a few years.
Yeah.
And that's because they both came from large poor families. I think both of them, I think Pippen had like 12 brothers and sisters. I know Rodman had something crazy like that too. And they, I'm sure they weren't getting anywhere near enough food and were not getting high quality like foods like steak every day either. So once they were able to go to college and were able to get 3 square meals a day, still probably not even the best nutrition, but still way better than what they were getting, they started growing like crazy.
Yeah, I never actually thought of that, and I watched that documentary too. I thought it was okay, but it just shows the power of food. It really does.
Yeah, honestly, like a lot of colleges, the ones that don't have all the money, they look out for kids like that. They're like, okay, what kid is small now, but that's only because he's poor? Like, if I get him in like my college cafeteria and I start getting him food every day, how much can he grow? Michael Jordan was kind of a late bloomer, too. I know there's a story of how he got cut from his high school basketball team, and that's what, like, drove him to become, like, the best basketball player in the world. That's because he was 5'11 at the time, and then all of a sudden he had a gigantic growth spurt, like, his junior or senior year. He went from, like, 5'11 to, like, 6'4".
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't because he was, like, terrible at basketball. It's to say he just wasn't that big.
He was a small guy, yeah.
So, going back to Weston A. Price. So, he found that people following an ancestral diet that's mostly meat, fish, eggs, and organ meats, not only did they have 4 times the calcium and other essential minerals, but they had 10 times the amount of fat-soluble vitamins. And when I'm throwing out these numbers, this was the minimum. They had at least 4 times and at least 10 times the amount of fat-soluble vitamins compared to, like, the standard American diet. So, like, some of the fat-soluble vitamins, things like vitamin A and vitamin D, those can only be found in animal foods. And before you try and think, oh, hey, carrots are such a great source of vitamin A, no, they're not. They don't contain any vitamin A. They contain beta carotene, which is not vitamin A. It can get converted into retinol, which is actually vitamin A, but that conversion is about 0 to 12%, depending on a lot of factors, and mostly important is how much fat you're getting along with it. So if you're just eating carrots, which pretty much have zero fat, you're not getting a lot of fat with it, so those fat-soluble vitamins are not very bioavailable. So it's way better to give your vitamin A through something like eggs, which has a lot of fat that will help you absorb the vitamin A, which is fat-soluble. It is such a better source, and it doesn't need to be converted. Yeah. Sorry for that tangent.
No, that's a tangent I would make, honestly, because it's like that point needs to be made more often because people just don't know that. And of course, we have a whole podcast on like the deficiencies of a vegan diet or the deficiencies of a plant-based diet. So if you want to know more about that and the truth behind, you know, the bioavailability of vitamins and minerals, just check out those old podcasts and we talk about it for hours.
Yeah, I forget which is it. Do we only do one on that or have we done multiple?
I know we've done two. I think we did the same one damn near twice because one of them sucked. So like the audio came out bad. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So an argument to support Price's claim that is jaw development is that much of jaw development occurs at an early age when a baby is only eating soft foods and not chewing at all. So if chewing was such a big factor, then why do babies get most of their growth when they're not chewing? They're eating things like eggs, or their mom is like chewing the food for them and then feeding it to them like a baby bird, or they're breastfeeding. No chewing is going on there. But that's when most development in our jaws occurs. So that's one reason to say that there's a significant difference between eating mashed carrots versus eggs when it comes to nutritional density. And that's one of the reasons why Price thinks that it has way more to do with the nutrition that you're receiving than the actual act of chewing. And if you want to know more about Price's discoveries, how Tyson mentioned that he has tons of books out there, check out his book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration.
It's honestly, calling it a book is a huge understatement. It's a textbook. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to answer pretty much all your questions. And I don't remember when he wrote this, but this is like a 60-year-old book, I think. Maybe it might even be older than that. Like, he wrote it a long time ago, but most of those are still going to hold up today, if not all of those ideas.
Yeah, it's on, I think, something like the 10th edition. So it does get updated, I think, every like 4 or 5 years. So it's it tries to stay as up-to-date as possible, but that backbone of all the data he collected is still there.
All right, so I just broke down two different hypotheses, whatever. So which one is correct? Well, honestly, there's no way to tell. There are no randomized human trials testing these ideas. The closest thing I could think of to like really find out was looking to see if there were any studies with chewing gum and jaw size, because that would basically just give you no more nutrition, but just make you chew all the time to see if there's, you know, jaw growth and jaw straightening or not. But unfortunately, I could only find anecdotal evidence, and most of those were coming from companies selling jaw, I think it's called like masticating gum, something like that. Mm. Gotta be really careful when I say that.
Yeah.
but it's basically just hard chewing gum that you chew all the time to make your jaw muscles bigger and stronger. I don't know how effective that is or not. I mean, it could be, but personally, I think that both ideas make a lot of sense and they're both right. I mean, I don't think that our jaw is getting weaker and we're observing this all across the world for one reason. It's probably multifactorial. I think both of these ideas have hold a lot of weight.
Well, I think that, I think literally both can be right at the exact same time. Because these soft foods, like Tom said, something like wheat or rice, are not going to be nutritionally dense. So it's damn near the same thing going on. You are chewing softer foods and you are losing vitamins and minerals. But I tend to go a little bit more towards the Weston A. Price view of it, that the vitamin and minerals deficiencies really is the main driver. Because I think they are both drivers in this situation. Because if you think about it from I don't know, from like a bodybuilding standpoint, like our body has muscle, our body knows how to build muscle. So if I worked out all the time, and this in this case, like this would be chewing that gum, right? But I didn't eat quality protein, like if I ate, say, like 50 grams of protein a day, I would never develop any sort of quality muscle. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that. If you just think of like prisoners of war, a lot of those people are like forced to work all day, every day. But they're getting like a shitty diet, so they come out tiny and scrawny.
Exactly.
I mean, like that happens all the time.
That happens all the time. So I think that's kind of a knock towards a chewing one. And also just, I think humans, our genetics know what to do. You know, we know our bodies when we're a baby, at least if you have, you know, decent looking parents, you know, your parents are some scrubs with shit genetics. Like if you have parents with decent genetics, something called genetic wealth, your body's going to know what to do. So if you provide it with all the vitamins and minerals it needs, and Weston A. Price would argue it is literally 10 times more than the recommended daily allowance. It's literally exponentially more vitamin A, vitamin E than what we're told we need. If we give our bodies all those nutrients, even without heavily chewing things, just genetically, our body would know to build big, strong bones, you know?
I mean, maybe, but I'm going to go back to something you said at the beginning of the podcast. If you don't use it, you lose it. So if you were just doing smoothies all day, every day, and never, like, putting your jaw muscles to work, I mean, I could really see the case where you wouldn't really have big, strong jaws despite you having all the nutrients possible.
No, see, I think if you have, if we consider, like, breast milk a smoothie, like, if you did breast milk for the first 3 years of your life, like, I think you would still develop strong jaws.
Well, with that, you are using your jaw muscles for that, like, sucking motion.
Sure.
So it's not, you're not chewing, but you're still working your jaw muscles. So I think they're both right.
Like, yeah, I think they're both right.
If I want to give, like, if I'm going to, if they're, like, on a seesaw, I don't know who is winning, but I think, like, they both, you need both. I don't think there's any way around it.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, do you, I feel like we both agree.
Yeah, no, I'm down with that. Yeah, if I had to pick one, I would just go with Weston A. Price over the author of the Breathe book because I respect Weston A. Price way more. You know what I mean? That's all. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. I would go with that too, but I think, yeah, you can't get one without the other.
Sure.
You need proper nutrition, and you need that stimulus to grow. I think you need both.
Yeah.
So that kind of sums up a lot of the topic, but I do want to finish with an interesting study I came across on wisdom teeth removal. So get ready, because this is pretty shocking. Honestly, it shouldn't be shocking, but I was blown away by this study, and I know Tyson was too.
Yeah.
So roughly 70% of people that get their wisdom teeth removed are doing so for no reason. In fact, they're probably putting themselves at greater risk of other health issues due to possible complications from the surgery, due to the anesthetics, complications like you get paralyzed, you could lose feeling in your like lips, tongue. You can lose the sensations of teeth. I mean, this could be, happen for days, weeks, or even the rest of your life. Or another possible complication that's pretty popular are infections. I mean, there are a lot of other complications that can arise, but these are the two most popular ones. Either you lose feeling, you lose sensation, or that surgery, that spot becomes infected. Because there are tons of bacteria that live in our mouth. So if you have an open wound in your mouth, it's very easily can be infected.
Yeah, I actually got an infection from my wisdom teeth being removed.
How long did that take to heal?
It took, you don't remember this. I came to me and Tom used to spend Christmas Eve together, like, pretty much every year until, like, our 20s. I came to Christmas Eve high one time because I was on a bunch of pain pills. Do you remember that? I was 19.
I want to say it took you about a month to recover.
It was a long time, yeah. I was pretty jacked up from my surgery. I got, I forget what is it called when you get, like, blood built up under your skin? Hematoma? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had that in my face. So my face like blew up like a damn elephant face, and I got an infection in one of the sites, and I was out for a while. Yeah, it wasn't like, I mean, I didn't die obviously, but it wasn't fun.
Well, that scarred me, and I got my wisdom teeth taken out pretty much like the week before my dental insurance like ran out like on my parents' coverage. So like I was pretty much either now or never. And, like, at the time, I thought, oh, this is something I have to do. So I waited till the last possible minute to do it because I knew what happened to you.
Yeah.
And you were 18 at the time, 17, something like that?
Something like that, like 18, 19, I think.
Yeah, working out all the time. Like, yeah. It's not like you were in bad shape. Like, you were in great shape.
Yeah.
Like, you're, like, really healthy overall. So, like, for that to take you down is really surprising.
Yeah, no, and I didn't have symptoms like my jaws didn't hurt. I wasn't complaining of like, oh my God, like these teeth coming in is killing me. It was more of a, oh, it looks like, you know, these might not fit in your mouth. Let's just take them out.
Yeah. So you're probably in that 70%.
Yeah.
Most likely I was in that 70% too that didn't need to get them taken out.
Because I have a big ass head. Because this, honestly, you pull another study made me think about it way more critically. I have a huge jaw, a huge head. If teeth don't fit in my mouth, everyone's screwed. You know what I mean? Like nothing about my head is small, you know?
And honestly, so reading this article, even if they don't like make it out of your, like pass through your gum line, I forget what that's called. Like, it still doesn't mean they're going to be a problem. So roughly about 12% of the population actually should get them removed. That's about the same as those that get appendicitis. So that's 10%. But we don't remove everybody's appendix because they have a small chance of having issues with it later. So why do we do this for wisdom teeth? It makes no sense.
But if you look at it like this way, it does.
So I can't really tell you what any individual's motives are, but this striking figure might give you an idea. So the average annual income of oral surgeons from removing wisdom teeth alone is about $520,000 a year. So removing unnecessary surgeries from that equation would result in a $350,000 a year reduction in annual salary. So that $520,000 turns into $170,000. That is definitely going to make a big difference in what kind of car you drive, what house you live in, a lot of other things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, basically surgeons are encouraged to promote this procedure if an individual looks like they might suffer from any discomfort with their wisdom teeth or anything else. So that 12% of that population that actually needs to get them removed, that percentage starts growing a lot more with like, well, I don't want my clients to feel pain, so let me just remove this from the equation. Oh, well, hey, now they can get infected and have to deal with 3 months of discomfort when maybe their teeth might hurt for a day or two. I don't know. I'd rather just take the growing pains of a day or two than having to deal with an infection for a few weeks.
Yeah. You know, actually, this is, well, everything, the education we both have over the past, you know, maybe 5 years or so, just about ancestral eating and vitamins and minerals, bioavailability, all that stuff is really going to shape how we are with our kids. You know, I think our kids are going to be animals, like straight up monsters, and I hope they are. But I never thought about this, but now if their teeth start hurting a little bit and some dentist is like, oh, let's take out the teeth just in case, I'm going to say, sorry, bro, pump your brakes. You know, let's wait and see what happens.
Yeah, wait for it to actually become a problem.
Exactly. Yeah, because mine were not a problem. I never complained about having, like, horrible pains in my brain. Like, never.
The only time I thought it was a problem was when the dentist told me it was going to be a problem. Yeah. I never thought it was a problem other than that.
Yeah, that's sad, man. But, I mean, we both know that healthcare is corrupt. It's really all about money. And I forget a lot of the times that dentistry is just a branch of healthcare. You know, it's the same damn thing. So, it's sad. But at the end of the day, most of this shit is all about money. None of it's really about health.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, I hate to like, you know, have that conclusion, but it's really hard not to when you just kind of like look at the numbers and look at the facts. Like, I really don't think most doctors or dentists are getting into this field just to make money. I think they really do care about helping people. But somewhere along the way, I don't know if it's something to do with the education that they receive or what, but they just start helping themselves a lot more and more and start helping their patients less and less.
Yeah, it seems, I mean, I think the system, you're right. I think a lot of people come into this fairly good intentioned, but the system that they're kind of let into breaks people. It really does.
Yeah, I mean, it's all just a big business and they just get caught up in it whether they know it or not. So, I mean, it's just kind of, yeah, it's like the system's broken. It just sucks.
It just sucks. Yeah, it really does. Well, that was a really good podcast. Thank you for pulling up that topic because I never would have thought of that myself, you know?
Well, there was so much more to this than I thought. I mean, it's always one of those things like I just thought about, you know, like one of those shower thoughts or just something like you wake up in the middle of the night and just have this like strange idea. But yeah, I'm just so glad we read that Breathe book. I mean, he goes into it quite a bit, like his idea about it. And he has a lot of, he shows a lot of evidence about how skulls keep getting smaller and smaller over like hundreds of years. And yeah, I mean, this is something that's plagued humans like around the world forever. I mean, I think we have some answers why now.
Yeah, I think so. Well, all right. Well, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. That really helps us out. And please tell your friends about it, too. You can find us anywhere podcasts are found. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.